Ja, da. Riri. Ja. Ja. And they have the key. I don't know. I think I have to use the key. Otherwise.
Wang Chien Khan. Lai. Okay, start.
Stuck. Change what? Why must change?
The spare mic.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah, put that.
How was the discussion? Good? Huh? You like it? Huh? Oh, you don't like it? So maybe group number 6? Anybody? Oh.
You're not supposed to present, eh? Non-graduate. You didn't take it? You took.
Okay, so. Also, question 6. Yeah. Question number 6.
Yeah. Nice.
Question number 6. Explain.
Okay.
Everyone listen.
So
usually that's the thing, people don't pay attention to whoever is speaking, so that's important, okay? Please just listen to what the presenter is saying. And the presenter, slow and steady, yeah?
Stage 5, yeah, so older student, have mercy on me, yeah? Okay, does the Mahayanis, that is a person following the Mahayana path, need to practice the Hinayana teaching in its entirety? First of all, we have to come to an agreement. What is the meaning of entirety? So our group come to a conclusion. When we say that a Mahayanis need to practice the Hinayana path teaching in its entirety, means that the Bodhisattva has to realize, have to attain the realization like that of an Arahat. That means he will have to practice such that he will abide in Nibbana, the eternal bliss. So the answer is no, because the purpose of a Bodhisattva is to not to abide in Nibbana, but to guide all sentient beings to the final state of enlightenment. However, the text, if you look at the text, right, you say something like, a Bodhisattva, in order to guide all sentient beings, have to complete the teachings of the three paths. That means he or she has to understand and complete the teachings of the what you call that, the Hinayana path, solitary realizer path, and the Mahayana path. So what does that mean? It seems there seems to be a contradiction here. So our group try to overcome the contradiction based on So actually what it means is that
supposed to be there's another one person, yeah? Who is your
maybe you answer the second
can
one.
Can you come? This group are two person, yeah? So come together. Yeah. Now you can sit there together.
The question is, does a Mahayanist need to practice the Hinayana teachings in its entirety? What my fellow groupmate is, she's trying to clarify some qualms, but I think there is no need because we are just here to answer the question. So, our answer is no, the Mahayana practitioner need not practice the Hinayana teachings in its entirety because as a Mahayanist, the motivation is to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. So with regard to the Hinayana goal of achieving self-liberation, that is an exception.
Yeah, did you got the answer? So you're not happy, must ask.
Any objections?
Any objection, then must come. Huh? No.
Everyone had the same answer? Every group? It's a group thing here. Yeah.
Okay,
now if you all have the same answer, yeah? So now this question is posed to you. Listen.
Pena, the Tamje came to Kobang. Shingi Tanala. Pena, Tamje came to Kobang, Tobala, Tambu Rangi, Taba Toko Maribes.
So, you all have the same answer, yeah? So, if you need to achieve the state of omniscience for benefit of others, wouldn't you need to achieve liberation for yourself first? Wouldn't you need to achieve liberation for yourself first? Yes or no?
Yes.
Oh. This is how you debate. You say yes, huh? Okay. Xiao Liao. He ai zai no yo.
Rangi tarba de rangi se tarba thok go da len di ding ma song ha.
If you say yes, then the early answer is wrong. Wow, not bad, not bad. This basic program, not bad.
Kimbala, the Mahayanist needs to achieve liberation for themselves
first.
So, we are not saying that we are not necessarily saying your answer is all you agree with the same answer, right? We're not saying that it's necessarily wrong. But we are saying that if your answer to the second question hinders or opposes what you have just said earlier. We are not against your answer, but your answer to the second question, you all say no, yeah? Yes, right? Basically, you're opposing your own answer.
But But we didn't give that answer.
And this, what you said?
No, everybody said yes to your second question. Then but I didn't say yes.
So you said no. Everybody say yes, but you want to say no.
I think the answer needs to be more elaborated further.
No, elaborate, we elaborate later. First, you decide yes or no. That will come later, you know, you can explain. Yeah, but at the moment, you have to say which side you're going, yes or no. And after that,
actually, I think the Bodhisattva would remain in cyclic existence for all sentient beings and would not necessarily have to achieve nirvana first because of their great compassion and bodhicitta. So maybe the answer is not necessarily yes.
The question is this. To achieve the state of full enlightenment, wouldn't you need to achieve liberation first?
Yeah, what do you think? Yes? No?
No need? No need to give up delusions?
Tarba said the Karasore, Nimon the Tarba Sugoro. Tarba said the Nimon the Star, Nimon the Jibala Tarim the Tarba Sugoro.
What is liberation? Liberation means to be freed from the afflictions, isn't it? So it follows that if you say yes, then it follows that in order to achieve the state of full omniscience, you must first achieve liberation.
How about the other definition of liberation, abiding in eternal bliss?
Huh?
That means attached for the same.
Next. Okay, so next, I don't know. Yeah, group number one.
Group number one.
Yeah, group number one, question number one, yeah.
Send two people. Two peoples.
Yeah, come, two.
Two peoples.
Huh?
This is only one people.
Bring two from your group, two person come together. Yeah.
My answer is Mahayana.
Mike.
The answer is no. The Mahayana should practice all Hinayana teachings.
Question one.
Okay. For this question, we identify the three groups of teachings, as the three groups of disciples that the teachings cater to. The three groups are the disciple of the smaller scope, middling scope, and the higher scope. So those practices that are for the lower scope disciples, the main practices for the lower scope disciples become the preliminary or the secondary practices of the middling scope and the higher scope students. So the practices of the main practices of the middling scope student, which is renunciation of samsara, becomes the preliminary practice for the higher scope student. And the main practice for the higher scope student is bodhicitta. So their preliminary scope practices will be all those practices that are the main practices of the lower and the middling scope students. So that's how we come to the answer. That's our answer.
So, any comment about the answer, what just now she read? You're happy with the answer? Not happy? Huh? Not happy? Okay, you talk.
But I don't know right or wrong. Yes, I agree with you. I agree with what she said. But I also think that even though the ultimate goal is, I don't know what. Never mind. I mean, right? The primary path, right, and the secondary path, the primary points of the path and the secondary points of the path, right? In each category, like the small scope, the middle scope, and the higher scope, in each different scope, there is a primary point. That means the ultimate goal that each capacity needs to achieve. But in order to achieve that, the secondary points needs to be established first. Meaning, in the transcript, right, you mentioned something like, I think the primary points of the path refers to the ultimate goal which person of the different capacity aspire to achieve. Well, the secondary points refer to the necessary path which this person needs to take in order to achieve the primary goal. Okay? The example you gave was the person of the middling capacity, right? Mainly what they want to achieve is to overcome the attraction to the future lives in samsara, to develop the intent or the wish to achieve liberation, and also to develop the thought of renunciation. But in order to achieve that, the preliminary practice is for this capacity to cultivate the meditation on human life of freedom and endowment and on death and impermanence. So in short, if you want to go to Joo Koon, right, from Tampines, you have to pass by Bugis, Kallang, you know, like this. Is it correct or no?
Yes, correct.
Sorry, I just want to know, if let's say you start your journey from Tampines, go to Joo Koon, must pass by so many stations. What if my journey start from Boon Lay, one station I drop already? Please help me with this. Thank you. Meaning, from Tampines, go to Joo Koon, must pass by necessary station. Many stations are with the cross from east to west. But what if I already started from Boon Lay? My station starts from Boon Lay. I only drop at Joo Koon, only one station, one stop. No need to take station and walk. Someone say walk. Yeah. please help answer. So not necessary agree. Not necessary agree.
So it follows that you're saying that everybody have a different way of entering the path.
Yes, thank you.
It follows that some bodhisattvas no need bodhicitta to enter the path.
Not necessary.
It follows that it's necessary. Because bodhicitta is the only entranceway to the Mahayana. Therefore, everybody has the same starting point.
Is it for present or past life? This great question.
You must understand what she's trying. The analogy. She's putting analogy. No. I'm not going to get involved with LTA's plan. There's Liu. What his name? Liu, whatever his name is. Liu Tak, sir, or whatever. You know what I say actually supports you leh. What I say, but he's talking to me.
That tea nane, that tapasum lambi, kawaya mares, San Yabala, and it tapasum karsa, you chungotan, jingdan, tinzo yams lankures, so that he quadi nikur, in body, give chimbo lambi yams lambala, give jingdan, chungakanse, lambi yams lankures, Yava, tin yams malam, but give chimbo lambi yams lans yamares, but the quadi nikur, in body.
So the very essence is this, what you have to understand. You know? In order to engage in the practice of the practices for a person of great capacity, you must engage in the practices of the persons of small and middling capacity. That's the point. That means there's no such thing as starting right, you know, with the practices of the person of great capacity. So in order to enter the path of the person of great capacity, you must first train in the path that is shared with the persons of small and middling capacity. No way you can just jump straight into the path of the person of great capacity. In order to engage in the practices for a person of great capacity, the person must engage in the practices that are shared with the persons of small capacity. So no, the person of small capacity does certain practices, isn't it? So these practices must be done also by a person who wants to enter into the path of the person of great capacity. Similarly, this person must also engage in the practices that are done by the persons of middling capacity. Okay, so that's the point. You understand?
Okay, 난간내바시 지기지 편도내바치다 카가카가 임바지 고야 말했어 지기 잡조시니 즉 깨고야시 어떤 데시 고고야 임바래
Yeah, so the essence is that one should not think that the path of the persons of small capacity, the path of the person of middling capacity, and the path of the person of great capacity are like completely, you know, unrelated and nothing to do with one another. It's not like that. Okay, the point is that even if you want to practice the enter into the path of the person of great capacity, you must engage in the prior practices. Yeah. So the earlier practices, the practices of a person of small and middling capacity, helps. One to be able to enter into the practices of the persons of great capacity. So those is what they said, but you have to look deeper and think about things, you know. So as a so-called as a person following the Mahayana path, if you want to do the practices of a person of great capacity, you know. So if you are such a person, you know, then if you look at the practices for a person of middling capacity, how does it help you? If you say that it is necessary, isn't it? But so is it necessary? How is it necessary? How does it help you, you see? So you can go into detail and you look, you see.
What did this? That tanda yin, that lobsun chebe, tamala, that tanda, so so you go on yish, dingzo chabash, me energy, tuatina, dishi japtuish. So so dingzo yavetan, dishi japtuish, so I kishimore.
So one of the goals of learning here is to develop, you know, that definite understanding, you know, that certainty in your heart, you know, we've got it, you know, you're so sure, you know, that you're so confident in your answer because you've thought about it, you know, such that, you know, if anyone was to ask you a question, you're able to answer, you know, with confidence, you know. Yeah. So that's what we hope to achieve, lah.
I can actually say from my personal experience that I really experienced this because I became a Buddhist.
Six year others.
I had practical experience of what we are talking about here, so that might help you. I became a Buddhist only in 2005, and by the time I joined Amitabha Buddhist Center and, you know, I found the courses, the BP was into the module on the highest scope. And I was hesitant, but I had a lot of kind friends who said, no, it doesn't matter, join it. At least you can start doing the BP from this point. But they were very right, and I appreciate the fact that I did the second part of the program. But my foundation has been weak. I found that, you know, I would be trying to do the meditations and I went back home, but I didn't actually know how we define suffering, for instance, or what are these three kinds of sufferings, which is a foundational practice, which I would have learned if I had done the BP from the beginning. So my personal experience really confirms this, that this time around, I'm actually finding answers to questions I've had, or when, you know, Geshe-la would ask things about the mind or something, those were modules I'd missed. So I was not really able to participate as fully as I might have done if I had done from the beginning, so we would have started with the lam rim. And so now I find this time around my questions have disappeared, most of them, and I find there's much more stability in what I'm doing.
So must study. group 5. Yeah, question 5. Yeah.
Group 5, 两个人.
Yeah, come.
Where is group 5?
Ah. 다 돈다 들었다 모차난 제당 신하 제당 근데 제 말은 뭐 조금 같다 높은 집에 같이
차게 돼
no?
Wait. I'm Yokman and this is David.
I haven't finished my talk. 그게 신하다 천하 맞췄지 아니 뭐 천하 지고 말해 그런 것 같다 강가 사와 차교를 장벽 앞에 너와 양지 인해서 있나요 어 이제 납치세요 섬기요 말해 강가 사와 장벽 앞에 인자양 창매 주 겹겨 대신 양과에 너와 어떻게
So everyone is here to study. Everyone is doing the same study. So there's no need to be 排斥 라우퀴 I think it's more powerful than English. Yeah? There's no need to be embarrassed or shy or afraid to speak up or to air your views and what have you. Yeah? So everyone is learning. Yeah. Okay. So, but when someone is explaining, so everyone should listen and give your support. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Hi everybody, I'm the substitute now.
What's your name?
David.
Okay.
Okay, I read out the question again. How is the negative karma of abandoning the Dharma accumulated? When one accumulates such negative karma, how does that harm one? Okay, from our group, we have actually discussed what is actually abandoning the Dharma first. Okay, I mean, we concluded that, you know, the Dharma is actually, the main gist is abandon non-virtue action, practice virtuous action. This is the teaching of the Buddha. I mean, we have been reciting every Tuesday and Thursday. Okay, because if we abandon this Dharma, you know, the teaching, then the first thing is we don't believe in karma. You know, if we don't believe karma, we don't like believe every teaching, you know, like there's rebirth, there's and so many other things. Okay, so as a result, you know, we actually will lose faith in the Buddha's teaching. If we don't believe, you know, all the teaching the Buddha has actually talked about. So in the result, we go around telling people, no, there's no Buddha. No, don't believe in Buddha. You know, there's no karma. Continue doing bad things, you know. There's no rebirth in the lower realm. You know, and if you look at the sangha, you know, you go around telling that why is this sangha doing? They practically do nothing, you know. You know, so you go around speaking all the bad things about the three jewels. So I think this is not one of the things we should train in order to enter the Mahayana path. We should really have faith and respect to the three jewels. So, the next question is, how does that harm one? Actually, according to the King of Concentration Sutra, stated abandoning the sutra basket is a heavier sin, more than destroying all the stupa in the southern continent. And it's also heavier than killing all the arhats as they are grains of sand in the Ganges. Thank you. You got anything to add?
I think he has addressed the most part of what we have discussed. Do you have any questions? Or disagreement?
Wow. Okay.
I feel like a goalkeeper now.
Yeah, anything?
Anybody would like to?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, being
I say the main gist is abandon these non-virtual actions, perform virtual actions.
So
yes, I say that, but these are all the secondary points. Tell people, no, not going to practice.
So if that was what I heard from me. That was the definition of Dharma, is it? That is what Dharma is it?
Abandoning the Dharma means you're abandoning non-virtual actions.
No, you define Dharma as abandon non-virtue, cultivate virtue, isn't it? That's what I heard. So subdue your mind thoroughly is not teaching of Buddha then.
Sorry, subdue the mind. She said that.
Subdue the mind, that's the teaching of Buddha is. Yeah, anybody have comment?
I feel when it comes to the harms, possible harms for oneself of abandoning the Dharma.
Come here.
I also have that it can lead to disharmony and bad feelings for people who practice other traditions and beliefs. Because in our text, it says one way of abandoning the Dharma is if you start cherry picking, you pick up some practices and say these are fine, but others are obstacles to Buddhahood or to enlightenment. So you're being selective in the practices you pick up. If you kind of say, okay, I'm a Mahayanist and the other person is a Hinayanist, and you know, you tend to do down the people in the other traditions. So it can lead to disharmony within the social context of wherever you're living, because you don't respect their tradition. So that's, to me, is another harm that you can come to. Plus, of course, I feel very strongly that if you abandon the Dharma, you are, first of all, you are not going to reach enlightenment, and secondly, you're very likely to have rebirths in lower realms.
Tina ne zo da zo zo tepa chijung se di ta kalso da ta ngon da mangpo ji ting mo da pe na da tepa chimbo ime jun zi zi ne tepa chungon su du da po dewa me bata wu si zin de ga si ma tepa chimbo in si da tepa me me chuk in ya na di nyawar ko ba ma re si ni da ta ji du tar si zin de ba ina da dewa chimbo sa ya da tun da zo di sun bu ya re.
So this, we are talking about the negative karma of abandoning the Dharma in the context of the qualities of the Namrim teaching. This Namrim teaching possesses four greatnesses, isn't it? So this is the context of the discussion. So in the context of this discussion, it is very common, if you see, and they're around, and the people who proclaim or who claim themselves to be following the Mahayana path, isn't it? But there are many of such people who say and believe that the practice of the Hinayana is not necessary for them. Nothing to do with them. Totally no connection. And so if they really believe what they say, if they really believe what they think, then that is said to be an extremely grave misdeed.
Yeah.
So if a person who wants to practice the Mahayana, claims to be a Mahayana practitioner, if that person really believes that the Hinayana teachings are not necessary at all, nothing to do with me, for example, so that misconception is a grave misdeed. So, because if you have such a misconception, for sure you'll definitely not achieve what you want. Supposedly, you want to achieve liberation and enlightenment. You're supposed to want to achieve liberation and enlightenment. Enlightenment in particular, isn't it? So, if you hold on to such a misconception, there's no way you will be able to achieve the enlightenment. No way to practice the Mahayana path. Not only on top of that, you accumulate this grave misdeed of negative karma, yeah, isn't it? You're distancing yourself, in fact.
Question 7.
I'm Kelvin. So the question 7 is, does a bodhisattva take rebirth in cyclic existence to benefit sentient beings? Okay, here we define the bodhisattva as a bodhisattva who have generated uncontrived bodhicitta. So the answer is yes. Then, if this is so, how does a bodhisattva then develop renunciation of or disenchantment with samsara? When a bodhisattva is someone who have already generated renunciation, but out of compassion, he wants to benefit sentient beings, he takes rebirth in samsara to help all sentient beings to achieve enlightenment. So in the course of taking rebirth, he experienced all the suffering of cyclic existence. So he himself actually have even more disenchantment towards samsara than the Hinayana, because he himself takes on the suffering of rebirth in samsara. Therefore, this is how he generated renunciation. But it doesn't mean that he's afraid of taking rebirth in samsara, because out of great compassion, Bodhisattva wants to help all sentient beings to be liberated.
As an example, we can see this through reincarnate lamas. They keep coming back into samsara, yet they don't quite go through the same type of suffering, because their minds have already been developed to a certain point, so that they just, it's something that we can see in His Holiness, and that's just to further elaborate the example.
Okay, yeah. Happy about the answer? Huh? Look like nobody clapping the hand. Yeah. Anybody understand what he said? Huh? You got?
When bodhisattvas take rebirth in cyclic existence, do they experience pain or not? He said no. He said, for example, His Holiness. So His Holiness don't experience headache. No pain. Oh, yeah, yeah, pain. Pain, right? Ah, pain. Now it's time for the graduates to say something. if you disagree with any of the points brought stated, so you can air your disagreement. Where are you? How many are you? Quite a few of you here, no? 12, 13 of you. So what's your answer to the question?
Just to clarify what I said, I probably didn't use the proper wording.
Okay.
In terms of how they mentally experience different sufferings, of course they experience pain, and you know they take on a human body, ordinary form, and they have to go through all the sufferings of that: birth, old age, sickness, and death, and all those things. And you know, but they're mentally it's a completely different perception, because bodhisattvas, they welcome pain, they welcome sickness, they don't yes. have such aversion for such suffering, because all they are concerned with is benefiting all sentient beings and leading all sentient beings to enlightenment. So whatever suffering and things that they do experience as a result of taking an ordinary form, it doesn't hinder them in the least in what they want to achieve.
So the answer is yes. They experience suffering.
I just didn't use the right wording, but
that delight in the legal pen, that change somebody so that corovati panchar zingiriya manis corons.
So
corva sudukan tashi dukja in the tungur.
So, don't the bodhisattvas see cyclic existence as an object of embodiment completely? There's nothing good about cyclic existence. Don't they regard cyclic existence as something to be given up completely? Something to be abandoned completely? Yes or no? Yes.
Oh,
yes. Next. Okay, you said yes, yeah. It's not so much the answer, it's a process, yeah. Okay, you said yes, good. But when the bodhisattvas, when they enter into cyclic existence for benefit of us and human beings, don't they enter into cyclic existence enthusiastically and happily with full joy? Huh? Yes, perfect. Yes or no?
Yes.
I have no choice, right? Of course I have to say. Then it follows that the bodhisattvas, since they enter into cyclic existence to benefit sentient beings happily, so it follows that the bodhisattvas do not regard cyclic existence as entirely bad, and completely do not have 100% idea that samsara is something that need to be abandoned. No, not enough, okay.
Huh? What is the provision?
Who said no provision?
Ah, provision.
Oh, that one must be graduate talk. They definitely graduate talk, yeah. No provision, ah?
Mata, korowasudo, tajudo.
Do bodhisattvas apprehend samsara as something to be discarded completely?
torcha jinge jigi ani gashin to jitela dugu marwa dugu.
So does can anyone happily take up something that he or she has really decided that is completely bad? It follows that then effort is easy for everyone. No, there's no need to make effort. Well, if you can do something that you don't like, something that you like, definitely you do better, isn't it? Free, no need effort. Don't bodhisattvas have a wish to be freed from samsara as quickly as possible? So the bodhisattvas, do they want to stay in samsara as long as possible or as short as possible? As short or as possible or as long as possible? As long as possible. Oh. Then why generate bodhicitta? No need bodhicitta. Oh, if that's the case, no need to become Buddha. What? Oh, therefore, that's why I cannot stay in samsara. Must get out quickly. With different agenda. So, I mean, the answer to the question that you guys gave, the answer to the question is correct. But in order to make your understanding stable and really solid, then you know one can ask all these questions. Then you really see whether you really know the stuff or not. Yeah. So if you think about it, the bodhisattvas have a wish to get out of samsara quickly, but also you can also wonder whether they really want to stay in samsara for a long time or not. Do they? They want to stay in samsara to benefit us, no? So what do you think? What do you think? The bodhisattvas want to get out quickly or they want to stay in longer? Staying longer means enlightenment quicker or slower?
Is that longer or quicker?
Want to stay in samsara longer?
Who think longer? Yeah. The BB student. Yeah.
BB.
Graduate one.
Graduate.
Yeah. Benny Prakshong. Yeah.
Graduate. Wait, the mic, yes.
Hello.
Okay. Hi.
Okay, I just want to define the word bodhisattva. What is bodhisattva? Bodhisattva, you know, this is Mahayanism, you know. And you must have bodhicitta, that's very important. And including the great, great, great compassion. They stay in samsara out of love for all sentient beings. You know, they cannot bear to see them suffer. That was the reason why they stay. But
you talk like
it's not only
today, you talk like the bodhisattva.
Thank you. I mean, it's body, speech, and mind. The mental mind is very important. You know, the worry samsara. I mean, you don't talk about samsara, you talk about worry things. But it's the mental. It's very, very important. You know, when you are able to go into inner reflection about your mental mind, everything comes from your mind. If you can do that, this is bodhisattva. I mean, It's doing out of great, great love. That I can say. Nothing else. You know, I mean, whatever harm there done to him or done to anybody, he don't feel hurt. He just feel compassion for all of you. You know, when somebody is fighting, or even animals when they are having sickness, I mean, out of great compassion, they don't feel hurt in themselves. This is a renunciation of everything, you know. I just had that feel with me, that's all.
Isn't there a contradiction between bodhicitta and the wish to stay in samsara longer?
You cannot hear.
I'm talking about with the joyous perseverance, this create the cause to accumulate boundless wealth for them.
For the bodhisattva who's facing samsara.
Yes. Through the joyous perseverance, you see, they are also creating the cause to accumulate lots of merits for themselves.
Uh-huh.
And this will bring, you know, omniscience to all the sentient beings.
Quicker or slower?
Quicker.
So by staying in samsara,
it's also they
achieve enlightenment even faster.
Yes, because it will create a more accumulation of merits. This is the creating of cause.
So you stay in samsara, definitely you create more merit.
Yes, because the practicing through a joyous perseverance. Then they will create the boundless collections of merits anyway. Because for the sake of all sentient beings, our compassion.
So main thing to think about is whether bodhisattvas stay in samsara for a short time or they stay in samsara for a long time. So if you think that the bodhisattvas wants to stay in samsara for a long time, what are bodhisattvas? They have bodhicitta, which is essentially a mind aspiring towards enlightenment and aspiring towards the benefit of sentient beings. Essentially, they want to achieve enlightenment so that they can do perfect work for the sentient beings, isn't it? So if that's they have this thought all the time to when they can achieve enlightenment, isn't it? So if that's the case, then how can they be staying in samsara for a long time? How can they be thinking, I want to stay here for a long time? Yeah? Isn't there a contradiction between bodhicitta and the wish to stay in samsara for a long time? It follows there is a contradiction. So what is bodhicitta? What is generating bodhicitta? Basically, it's generating the mind which aspires towards enlightenment and which aspires to benefit sentient beings, isn't it? Because by achieving enlightenment, only then can you do perfect work for sentient beings. So bodhisattvas are always thinking about this, when I can achieve enlightenment, and I must achieve enlightenment quickly, I must. This is what they think all the time, isn't it? So if that's the case, then how can they be hanging around in samsara for a long time? So if this was said to you, then what are you going to do? Well, they are not enlightened, yeah?
You yes, don't. But the wish to achieve enlightenment, you can be in samsara because it's a mental realization. It's mental, complete mental. When your mind is thoroughly, thoroughly subdued, it doesn't matter where you are. And they choose to stay in samsara because that's where the sentient beings are that need to be benefited.
What is bodhicitta?
It's the mental wish to achieve enlightenment, to be a full benefit to all sentient beings.
Oh. Doesn't that contradict the wish to stay in samsara for a long time?
Well, they wish to stay in samsara to benefit sentient beings, but it's not out of attachment and it's not out of greed. It's not to hang on to impermanent things and like money and wealth. Their view of staying in samsara is to benefit sentient beings. It's not out of greed or to accumulate anything for themselves. They just want to help out the sentient beings.
Yeah, they help sentient beings while they're in samsara, but it doesn't mean that they want to stay for longer in samsara, isn't it? Yeah, yeah, as long as they're there, they continue to help.
Can I say that, you know, you have to achieve the state of enlightenment, yeah? So, of course, you must generate bodhicitta. And then after that, you can do perfect work, and you do perfect work. You come back as emanation bodies to turn the Dharma wheel to help mother sentient beings in the best way. Can I say that? You have necessarily to achieve enlightenment. Then after that, you can produce the emanation bodies, perfect gurus, doing perfect work for sentient beings. And that's why we are doing this course right now, and we are talking about relying on the guru and seeing the guru as the Buddha, because the guru is giving us the teachings and the guru is the living representative of the Buddha.
So you're saying, basically you're saying you need to achieve enlightenment quickly. Yeah?
Exactly. Then after that you can come back as emanation bodies, and then the teachings can remain in the world and sentient beings can benefit. So, and because you come back as emanation bodies, you know, you do perfect work.
So, bodhisattvas don't want to stay in samsara? Essence is bodhisattvas don't want to stay in samsara? Essence is that?
They have to attain enlightenment first, yeah. Right? Don't
essence
they?
Is they don't want to stay in samsara?
You and your tricky question.
No, it's not tricky. No, it's not my question. But that was the question that was posed as a reason.
Ken Rinpoche, I think to the question whether bodhisattvas want to remain in samsara for a long time, I think the answer is no. Because the reason why they practice is to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all mother sentient beings. So their primary purpose is to get all sentient beings out of samsara. So the reason they enter samsara is to benefit each and every one of them through their own whatever ways is best for the disposition, and they want samsara to end as soon as possible. That's why they want to get out of samsara as soon as possible. The reason being to get all sentient beings out of samsara. They don't want samsara to be very, very long. They want samsara to be short because they want all sentient beings not to suffer.
So the essence you're saying is they want to be achieved enlightenment quickly, but they come into samsara to make the process of achieving enlightenment quicker.
Quicker for who?
Sentient beings. Essence is that right? They want to achieve enlightenment quickly, but in order to achieve enlightenment, they come into samsara, so that by helping sentient beings, they achieve enlightenment quicker.
No,
is
that what you're saying?
Yes.
Very good. Perfect answer. You got what he said? Huh? Call a cutting at the Dindolo Yomar, Sansomal Yomar, call a Yabra Jundusta, Korwa City, that took it Tama Shita. Did the Jones call a cutting you to Tana in some of your Sansomal?
So, Bodhisattvas at all times know they are completely sick of samsara. No interest to stay in it for more than 1 second. This is not renunciation. Is there? They have no interest in staying on in samsara for long, 1 second longer. Yeah.
Na ta chikro ba ta ina changju samba tanda tinde tuwa tanda. Samje chik che tu yang tanda lama chwa lama chwa chire. Anti chwa le kro ba. Samje chik che tu yang.
So that's the case, isn't it? But as is mentioned in the Guru Puja, there's a verse which says that even if I have to stay in the fiery hells of Avicii, even for the sake of one sentient being, you know, they won't do it. Yeah. They have that kind of courage. Yeah. Don't talk about all sentiments, even for one.
Tindegi samshi yode, that tanda tindegi negative is not, that the negamarwa. T took it, tony new to sauce, and it's samshu tindegi, you are in a T took it, that so, the lot of sauce, and it's Sanji, come new to talk to us, call new to trash. Rawa, the new bushi checker.
They have that courage, isn't it? That determination, even just to benefit one sentient being. They can stay, they are willing to stay. And for yawns, yeah. They have that courage, isn't it? But in reality, do they stay as long as they wish not? In that, no. Because of that courage, the accumulation of merit and wisdom is enhanced. And that makes them achieve enlightenment quicker. So then, therefore, you have to think whether Bodhisattva stay in samsara a short time or long time.
Sometimes look like long time, sometimes look like short time. You can say maybe some Bodhisattva stay long time, some go very quick. Okay, I think we stop here. I don't think so. We can finish all the question here. Yeah.
So it's important to pay attention, to put effort into participating in discussions, yeah, discussions, debate, what have you. This is very important. Okay. And it's important to ask questions. Only then your learning, the quality of learning will be enhanced. Yeah? You really learn. It's not enough just to hear the teachings. Not enough.
So
So a lot of people just leave it at a level of listening, you know, they're just satisfied, you know. Oh, the teacher is teaching, I come to class, I learn, oh, I get it. And they think that they get it, you know. But it doesn't mean that you think that you get it means you've gotten it, you know. Because you only know whether you've gotten it or if you ask question. So then, you know, you have asked questions, then you know whether you have ascertained it, you know. So until we have gained the ascertainment, that means we have not realized it yet. We have not understood it yet. Until we have gained the certainty and ascertainment, yeah. Until we have ascertained the topic, yeah, that means we have not understood it yet. So, but in order for us to achieve ascertainment of whatever topic we are studying, therefore discussion becomes very important. Or debate, because in the course of discussion, any faults in your argument or your position can be brought up, highlighted. Then you engage in the process of cleaning it up, you know, dispelling all the faults or your wrong reasoning, what have you. Then your understanding will really be solid. It's a real understanding. Yeah. So another thing is to keep in mind all the time, it's just that when we discuss, or when you ask questions in the process, that should not be, you're not like, you shouldn't appear as if you want to fight, or if you're motivated by anger, let's say if you're answering out of pride, So, but anyway, because these attitudes or these afflictions have been with us for a long time. So, they do creep up. It's just a matter of paying attention and then just trying to not make sure they did not surface. So anyway, it happens. So it's normal. It happens. Yeah. So the discussion may be heated. It happens. But if we are mindful, all the time. So even if it happens, you're immediately able to catch it. You're able to put a stop to it or just cool it down.
Okay, we finish here.
Okay, we'll just the usual dedication prayers here.